you know, you want to take charge of your own health, right? So you can't really rely on the doctor when you go in there once every 3, 6 months, once a year, whatever, and they check your blood pressure right there. You know, what is that going to tell you? Really, you want to know, what's your blood pressure when you're living your life?
This is True to Your Heart, lessons on living a healthy, hearty life, brought to you by Amarin.
Welcome to True to Your Heart, where we discuss new ways of looking at your cardiovascular health with the leading health and wellness experts. I'm your host, Ron Jaworski, and today's episode is all about diabetes and heart health. Joining me first on the show today is Dr. Steve Edelman. Dr. Edelman is the founder and director of the Taking Control of Your Diabetes Organization, a professor of medicine in the Division of Endocrinology, Diabetes and Metabolism at the University of California, San Diego, and the director of the Diabetes Care Clinic at the Virginia Medical Center. He's written more than 200 articles, 5 books, and was given the Diabetes Educator of the Year Award by the American Diabetes Association, the Distinction in Endocrinology Award by the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists, and named in the top 1% of U.S. endocrinologists by U.S. News and World Report. He's here to discuss how diabetes affects your heart and how you can reduce your risk of heart disease, heart failure, as well as stroke. Dr. Edelman, quite a resume I just went through, and really can't thank you enough for joining us here on True to Your Heart. So let's have some fun and educate our listeners.
Okay.
Can you tell us why diabetes and heart health are such kind of personal issues with you?
Yeah, well, first of all, I have diabetes myself, and I have type 1, but we've been talking about the relationship between heart disease and type 2 diabetes for decades. But yet people have said, well, gee, what about people with type 1? What do they pass away from? Mm-hmm. Well, heart disease. So it's something that's personal. It's a big part of my career, seeing mostly people with type 2. And I would just say that, you know, people don't realize, you know, with diabetes, they're always afraid of losing their vision, losing their feet, going on dialysis. But the number one reason for morbidity and mortality, I hate to get morbid on the show, you know, death and dying is heart disease. So it's
right.
It's very close and dear to my heart personally and professionally.
Cardiovascular disease, as most people know, is the leading cause of death. And what some people may not know is that diabetes can make you more prone to cardiovascular disease. In your opinion, why is that?
Yeah, well, it's the very straightforward answer is that, let's talk about type 2 diabetes, the most common type, is that right. Type 2 diabetes is associated with other cardiovascular risk factors. It's based on the inherent etiology of the disease, like insulin resistance and a whole bunch of other medical terminology. But what goes along with type 2 diabetes is not just high glucose, central adiposity, a certain type of fat that's more dangerous than regular subcutaneous fat, high blood pressure, and dyslipidemia. And it's a certain type of dyslipidemia, and that's basically very high triglycerides, low HDL, abnormal LDL, which is the bad cholesterol. All of these things put together lead to a lot of heart disease. One more thing, Ron, is abnormal clotting. So people with type 2 diabetes, their blood has a tendency to clot a little bit easier. And that's not good, because when you get a clot, it can go to your brain, get a stroke, and it can go to your heart. It can go to your peripheral arms and legs. So type 2 diabetes, I mean, the good news is it's treatable. The bad news is that a lot of people don't have access or knowledge about the latest therapies. They don't have access to the best caregivers. And it's not like a death sentence with cancer. It's treatable. And I'll just say one more thing, that people who have type 2 diabetes and take care of it, they can live longer than people without diabetes of the same age, the same sex, the same weight. So there's a famous phrase, Sir William Osler said, the way to live a long and healthy life is to get a chronic disease and take care of it. Hmm. That's really true. I see that all the time in my practice.
Dr. Edelman, in my family, you know, diabetes runs through the family. Should I be concerned?
Well, yeah, sure, you can be concerned. But I think the better way to say that is you should be knowledgeable about what the things you need to do to prevent serious outcomes. So as a person with type 2 in your family, you should really make sure you get screened regularly. Try to keep your weight to the best level that you can. It's not always that easy. Make sure your blood pressure and cholesterol is under control. And take a baby aspirin if your doctor says that's okay. Because, you know, if you think about it, Ron, when the glucoses go high in someone with type 2, it doesn't really cause too bad of symptoms. High blood pressure doesn't cause any symptoms. High cholesterol doesn't cause any symptoms. Abnormal clotting in your blood doesn't cause any symptoms. So many doctors call type 2 diabetes a silent killer. It's really true. So if you're knowledgeable, like yourself, that you might be at risk because it runs in your family,
right?
You talk to your caregiver and you make sure those things are under control.
Mm-hmm. Now, heart failure is obviously a very serious condition, but it doesn't always mean that your heart has stopped and stopped beating. And what are some of the early warning signs of really potential heart failure?
Yeah, you're right. Heart failure is the number one cardiac abnormality in people with diabetes. And it's not a small deal, Ron. When you have the first one, and I don't want to scare anybody, but maybe scare you into getting better care.
Yeah, no, hey, scare some people.
Yeah, when you get an episode of congestive heart failure, your chances of having a second one is much higher, and your life expectancy goes down, your five-year life expectancy. So I'm not going to get morbid, but heart failure is something to take care of. Now, how do you know you have risk factors? Well, there are blood tests that you can get. There's a whole bunch of them, but they can measure the contractibility of your heart. And that's the problem with heart failure. Your heart doesn't contract strong enough to shoot the blood around the body to the different organs where it needs to. There's actually just a blood test that you go to the lab like you get any other blood test. And there's also a thing called, you know, most people know about an ultrasound,
right?
Where they can measure the contractility of your heart. So, Ron, the scary thing is, by the time you have symptoms of congestive heart failure, you're way past a very critical point where you can do preventative intervention. So I think that it's good for anybody with type 2, even anybody who's older, where it runs in their family. You say to your doctor, listen, you know, I'm a little worried that I might be at risk for type 2 and some of the other cardiovascular abnormalities. Is there a way you can check out the function of my heart? So even just a stress test, you know, where you get on the treadmill,
right,
and where they go a little faster, a little higher every 3 minutes, they can do an ultrasound. They commonly do that now anyway, before and after, where they look at your heart contractility, and they can tell a lot from that. It's not an expensive test. And if you can pick up an abnormality before you have an episode, that is awesome.
Dr. Edwin, what are some of the factors that can lead to an increased risk of heart failure?
Well, you know, I would say probably one of the biggest is hypertension, high blood pressure. Mm-hmm. And high blood pressure can really, it's a silent condition. Years and years of high blood pressure, which puts pressure on all your organs, your kidneys, even your eyes, but especially your heart. And when your heart has to beat blood against a tight pressure, you know, I'll just put it in your terms. When there's a middle linebacker ready to go through the lineman and sack you on your butt, that you want to prevent that.
You are correct.
Now, but when you were quarterback, they didn't have all those protection rules either.
No, I got hit a lot.
Yeah. And nowadays, they touch the guys with their pinky and it's a foul. You
know? They throw them out of the game now, right? Different game.
Yeah. So anyway, it's high blood pressure is probably one of the greatest risk factors, and poorly controlled diabetes and a dyslipidemia, abnormal cholesterol levels, probably are not helpful either.
Dr. Edelman, can you tell us more about how diabetes affects the heart, specifically in regards to high blood pressure, high LDL, and high triglycerides? What is that impact?
Yeah, I think the high blood pressure, which I just mentioned, I think it's worth saying again that when you have high blood pressure, it puts stress on every organ in your body. People that have kidney failure is typically due to high blood pressure. In addition to others, heart failure, it's high blood pressure. You've heard of diabetic retinopathy, one of the reasons why people go blind. Glaucoma. High blood pressure affects every organ in the body adversely. And so and high blood pressure over the years, which are asymptomatic, can really cause havoc. Now, when it comes to cholesterol levels, and I think it's really important to spend a quick couple seconds on this.
Sure.
When I say dyslipidemia, remember that when you people say high cholesterol, they just think of one number. So when you get a lipid panel from your doctor's office, it has several things. Total cholesterol is not that helpful, but we look at three major factors. One is the LDL, L for lousy. That's the one that's
lousy.
Hey, I go simple. I'm like a lineman. And L is for is lousy. High LDL is very strongly associated with heart attacks. And then you get triglycerides. And well, let me just do HDL first. HDL, H for high, if you remember that. That's mm-hmm. the good cholesterol. So you want a low LDL. Now, what happens is the metabolism of HDL is tightly linked to triglycerides. Triglycerides is another form of fat in the blood. To get the most accurate measurement, you have to do an overnight fast first thing in the morning. And high triglycerides has been associated with heart disease, especially in people with type 2 diabetes, but pretty much everybody. At the lipid levels, as I call them, you want a low LDL, and people usually go on a drug called statins. There's several right. others. Then you get low HDL. There's not much you can do about a low HDL. That's not good, because low HDL in and of itself puts you at risk for heart disease. And then there's high triglycerides. But it turns out that if you can control your blood sugars and bring down the triglycerides using medication, we have several classes of medication, it's always an inverse relationship. When you lower your triglycerides, your HDL goes up, because their metabolism is kind of linked together. You know, it's a complicated area. However, you want a low LDL, high HDL, low triglycerides. And the reason why people with type 2 diabetes are at a disadvantage when it comes to their heart, because they do have a classic, what we call high triglyceride, low HDL dyslipidemia. It's classic for people with type 2 diabetes. And then you add on the LDL problems. So it's a perfect storm for causing heart disease, premature heart disease in that group of people.
How can a person know that they're at risk? And I'll give you an example. I take my blood pressure every day. Years ago, I felt, I was told that's the right thing to do, and I do it. Unfortunately, all has been good. But, how will a person know if they're at risk? Obviously, taking my blood pressure, I'm solid, but all the other blood tests, things like that, is that the next step people need to take?
Yeah, well, part of anybody's routine exam, I don't care if you have diabetes or not, should be what we call a lipid panel. Mm-hmm. They tell you to come in fasting, mainly for the triglycerides. You come in the morning before you eat, and it's a very simple test, very inexpensive on every laboratory. Every doctor, nurse practitioner, or physician assistant should be getting them on their patients at least once a year, and sooner if you're adding in medications to see how that medication is working. So it's a very easy thing to look for.
Right.
And they look for total cholesterol, triglycerides, HDL, LDL. And then you talk to your caregiver and you say, are my levels at goal? And then you go online, you go on Google. You can go to our not-for-profit organization, Taking Control of Your Diabetes, some self-promotion here.
I like that. I'll take a cup.
Thank you. I'll send you one if you give me your address. It's all our information is complimentary, by the way. Mm. So we have lectures on cardiovascular care, understanding your lipid profile, how to avoid heart disease if you have type 2. So it's such an important problem, Ron, that we have multiple lectures on it. And we really lay oriented as well, too.
Mm-hmm. Doc, can you walk us through the ABCs, per se, of reducing your risk of heart disease, heart failure, and stroke? What are the ABCs we should all know?
Yeah, ABCs is simple. Now, we changed it now to ABCDs, but I'll add that on. So A is two things. A1C, which is that blood test that your doctor gets to see how well your glucose levels are doing over the past 2 to 3 months. Very important test. A also stands for aspirin. And aspirin, the current recommendations are, if you're over 50, you take a baby aspirin with the advice of your caregiver, your healthcare professional. Not everyone is a good candidate for aspirin. Okay, B is blood pressure. Very simple.
Right.
We try to get, I'll tell you what, the national goal says 140 over 90 or less. 140 is the top number.
Right.
call that systolic. 90 is the diastolic. I think that's too high. Many diabetes doctors like myself say you should really be getting down to 130, less than 130 over 80. And you said you measure yours every day. That's awesome. And you know quite well, blood pressure can bounce around. So
yep, I'm at about 128 over 78 normally. So I guess I'm in good shape.
You're in very good shape. And let people know that it does bounce around. You have to get a good cuff. You have such big biceps. You have to get a big cuff.
Oh, yeah.
You got to measure
it. I got a big right arm.
Yeah. So 130 over 80. And then it's always good to measure it at home. Get your own blood pressure cuff. You know, you go to the doctor's office. You're nervous. You got the white coat phenomena. Yep. Your blood pressure goes up like crazy. You know, your ex-wife is the person collecting the copay. It's really bad. And C is cholesterol. We just talked about the lipid panel. And D is drugs. And I know a lot of people accuse doctors of always wanting to push drugs, but we don't. I don't get a kickback for drugs that I prescribe. And I'm always going to push lifestyle. But being a physician, we end up leaving that for the dietitians and the exercise physiologists. But there's a lot of really good medications out there that can address LDL as well as triglycerides. There's no real drugs to raise HDL other than the fact you want to lower triglycerides, then that will in turn raise HDL because their metabolism is linked. Believe it or not, Ron, drinking alcohol, two drinks a day will raise your cholesterol more than people that do not drink. So I don't want to tell your listeners to start drinking alcohol definitely before 9 a.m. in the morning. But I would say this, that a lot of people think alcohol is bad for people with diabetes. Everything in moderation. And we try to stick to alcohol that doesn't have a lot of sugar in it.
Well, Dr. Edelman, I can't thank you enough for joining us here on True to Your Heart. You've been a great guest. Good luck with everything.
Ron, thanks for having me and good to speak to you.
All right. Thank you so much. I'll be looking forward to getting that cup.
I'm going to get your address. I'm going to mail it to you.
All right. And now we're going to bring in Dr. Schaefer Bader. He's a co-director endocrinologist and assistant professor of medicine at the UCSD School of Medicine, and is also an educator for organizations like Taking Control of Your Diabetes. Welcome, Dr. Bader. It's great to have you on the show. I know you are very passionate about this subject, so let's get this ball rolling and take it into the end zone, all right? That sound good? Put a little football talk in there for you. You know, if you have diabetes, the best way to manage your heart health is to manage your diabetes. That's pretty obvious. What are some good tips that you would give to our listening audience to stay on top of your diabetes?
Yeah, well, thanks, Ron, for having me. I am a big fan of this topic. I'm an endocrinologist. You know, I do diabetes all day, every day, but we care so much about the heart because it's obviously an important organ, but diabetes and heart health go so closely together that, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about approaches to protecting the heart. And that's an important thing to think about with anybody who has diabetes. And there's a whole list of things. I'm sure we'll get into most of them today if we have time that we can do to help protect our heart. But they range everything from medications, which is kind of an obvious one and one that we doctors like to spend a lot of time on. But all these other things that we're doing in our life day to day, things like, you know, your diet, what are you eating? Exercise and physical activity, you know, reducing, you know, stress in your life really play an important role in keeping your heart healthy. And that's actually true for everybody. You know, again, specifically, I care for mostly people with diabetes, but these approaches are true for just about anybody. But in particular, for people with diabetes, just because they're at higher risk of heart problems to start with.
If someone feels that they need help, and I'm sure there are a lot of people out there that want to hear your answer to this question, if they need help in managing their diabetes, who should they reach out to for support?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough question. Obviously, you know, hopefully you have a good relationship with your primary care provider or an endocrinologist if you're seeing a specialist. That's not always the case. And depending on where you live, you may have more or less access to folks like that. But, you know, the other thing, I think a lot of times people are kind of scared if they don't have a good working relationship with their provider, they're kind of scared to think about changing. But, you know, it's really important that you trust your healthcare provider, that you can go to them with questions and concerns. And if you feel like you're not really getting that from your provider, maybe first try talking with them about that. And then if that's not working out, think about looking for a different provider, and that's okay. You don't necessarily want to go around, you know, switching healthcare providers all the time, but you want to find one that you get along with and that you see eye to eye with. So step one, find a healthcare provider, primary care doctor, endocrinologist, someone like that. But there's a lot of other resources out there to really help people with diabetes. There are certified diabetes educators that are basically experts in exactly that. And they know.
Wow, experts. I like that.
Experts. Yeah. Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, they know more than I do about, you know, the day-to-day how to take care of diabetes, and whether it's, you know, we're talking about diet and exercise, you know, how to deal with the complications of diabetes and the medications, all this stuff. That's what they do. They're the best at it. And so I love, you know, when my patients go and spend some time, and that's another thing that they have, these diabetes educators tend to be able to give a little more time to actually work through a lot of these questions. So if you have specific questions, or if you don't have specific questions and you're like, where do I start? A diabetes educator is a fantastic resource. And a lot of times, you know, those are covered by insurance. So if you have insurance, you know, ask your provider to refer you to a diabetes educator. Maybe there's not an educator available in your area. Sometimes they can do this over telemedicine nowadays, especially with all these, you know, the Zoom conferences and everything. A lot of that information we can do remotely. So I love doing in-person stuff, but hey, here we are today.
Correct.
You know, and this is great. You know, it works just fine. We're getting the information out there. So the same can be done with the diabetes educator.
You know, we hear so much about lifestyle and the people's lifestyle, how it impacts, you know, their heart disease, how it impacts their diabetes. What are some lifestyle changes that you can make to lower your risk of heart disease, as well as managing diabetes at the same time?
Yeah, totally. Well, you know, I'm glad you put it that way, because they do tend to go hand in hand in a lot of ways. But lifestyle is a broad term. We do throw it out there, and it doesn't always, without defining kind of what it is. But really, the broad things with lifestyle are, you know, diet, physical activity, weight loss, and the other healthy behaviors, things like, you know, not smoking, or if you're a smoker, learning, you know, cutting back and quitting smoking. So these are the big things that you can really do to help protect the heart. And they also tend to lower your blood sugars and help treat diabetes as well. So, you know, let's talk about diet. And so, you know, diet, and I don't mean going on a diet. You know, we always use that term, I'm on a diet, or, you know, and that sometimes people use that when they're trying to lose weight. That's not what I mean. I mean, your everyday choices of the food that we're putting in our bodies. And, you know, we're learning more and more that really you are what you eat. And this is such an important part of our heart health and our diabetes health. So, you know, choosing, for example, you know, choosing foods that are low in carbohydrates, cutting out sugar as much as possible. That's kind of an obvious one for diabetes, but there's so many other dietary choices that we can make to improve our heart health. And some of the big takeaways, again, this is a great opportunity to go talk to like a dietitian or nutritionist about your specific diet. Like, what are you eating now? And what can you do for yourself to kind of improve your diet? But some big takeaways would be, you know, eating more fresh fruits and vegetables. Lean proteins are really important. Mm-hmm. That's things like poultry and fish in particular, really healthy proteins. And then whole grains rather than sort of like processed grains, which is kind of what's easy for us to find. A lot of these snacks that we love eating when we're watching football on a Sunday, you know, these things are...
That's the problem.
Exactly. Highly processed, right? Chips and pretzels and crackers and stuff like that. So we try to... Not that we have to cut those completely out of our lives, but minimizing the amount of those that we're eating. And then I'd say the last thing from a dietary standpoint, that's sort of a high yield... Actually, two more things. The second to last thing...
Keep going. You're the expert.
is watching the types of... Is the amount of fat that we're eating. So, you know, fat used to be this big boogeyman where every, you know... Everyone was trying to eat low fat foods. And that's not necessarily the most important, but it's eating healthy fats. So minimizing the amount of saturated fats. That's that, you know, really delicious fat that comes in butter and red meat and stuff like that. So, you know, sometimes we can eat that stuff, but we have to minimize the amount of it because that's unfortunately what kind of clogs up our arteries. So we minimize those saturated fats and the trans fats, which come in those processed snacks and foods. And we eat more of the healthy fats. So the, you know, the unsaturated fats, things that come in like, again, like fish and, you know, that type of food, nuts, olive oil, those healthy foods that sometimes we think about in like the Mediterranean diet. It's packed full of healthy fats. And the last thing on the diet, just while I'm yapping, is, you know, we talk about foods, but what about beverages? You know, what are you drinking? And I think that's especially for my patients with diabetes, I always ask, hey, what do you drink throughout the day? What do you like to drink? And if it's something that contains sugar, really any type of carbohydrates, when we eat or drink carbohydrates, it turns into sugar in our body. Then, you know, that's a super high yield way to improve your health just by getting rid of that. So maybe they drink orange juice, you know, 2 glasses of orange juice every morning. That's unfortunately packed full of sugar. I'd rather they just eat an orange, you know, and choose something else. Or if they drink regular soda, switch to diet. So there's a lot of opportunities out there to find beverages that have zero carbohydrates. And those are much healthier for people, both with diabetes and those without diabetes.
Dr. Bader, give us your advice on exercise. How much do you really need on a daily or weekly basis?
Yeah, this is, a tough question, but there's some good evidence out there to actually guide this. And, you know, I've listened to your podcast. I've heard other experts on here say this exact same number. And this is what I also agree with, that your goal for exercise really throughout the week should be working up towards 150 minutes per week. Mm-hmm. And the ideal way to do that is kind of spread that out over multiple days. So rather than getting 150 minutes on, you know, a Sunday evening before the end of the week, you know, spread it out. So 30 minutes, you know, a day for 5 days, something like that, as much as possible, not always doable, but that's kind of the target. And that's the idea behind that is to get sort of moderate intensity exercise over that time period. Now, if you're in really good shape and you're, you know, running marathons or you're doing super intense exercise, you can actually get away with less time because it's much more intense exercise. But for most of us who are just trying to kind of, you know, stay healthy and get out there and be active, 150 minutes is a really good target per week, or roughly 30 minutes a day, most days. And, you know, that can be, it doesn't have to be doing something hardcore. You don't have to be climbing mountains or, you know, sprinting. You can be doing a brisk walk and getting your heart rate up and just, you know, getting outside or getting on the treadmill or meet up with friends and walking. Walking's probably, in my opinion, the best overall exercise we have available to us because it's inexpensive. It's easy to do. You know, you can do it, you know, when you have time to do it. So I think it's a great option. So it's kind of a myth that you have to be out there hitting the gym, you know, getting, you know, right, doing hardcore exercises. It's really moving, getting your body moving, getting your heart rate up.
One of the things I've heard in other the interviews I've done has been discussed is, and it seems like kind of a no-brainer, but the recommendation is to sit less. Yeah. It seems simple, but it's very important. Just don't sit around. Get moving, right?
Yeah, I love that you brought that up. You know, actually some good research came out of some researchers here at UC San Diego where I work, that just literally just moving, just not sitting, is good for your heart. It's good for your vasculature system, which is really what we're worried about in the heart. We have little blood vessels that run in the heart. They run into our brain. They run down into our legs. And all these blood vessels are what we're trying to protect. And literally just moving, just not sitting is actually good for them. So when we sit and we're sedentary, you know, we become more insulin resistant, and that is damaging to the blood vessels. The blood sugars go higher. So literally just taking a break. I mean, you know, I do spend a lot. I'm a researcher. I also see patients when I'm doing research. I spend a lot of time sitting at my desk and I have to actively get up and move around. I have to remind myself to do it, but it's really important. So again, moving around is great. And it's not just exercise that's good for you. It's just physical activity. And so whether that physical activity is, you know, playing with your, you know, grandkids or, you know, going golfing or whatever it is, it's movement. It's moving your body, and any movement helps.
Tell me about sleep. How much of a factor does sleep come into play?
Sleep is really important. And, you know, sleep is one of those things, unlike some of these things that are sort of behind the scene. I mean, sometimes people have high blood sugars and they don't know it. They don't feel it. Sometimes they have high blood pressure and they don't really feel it. And that can be kind of scary because that damage is happening behind the scene. And so it's hard to sort of engage in getting healthier when you don't feel any different until it's kind of like too late and then some of the damage is done. Sleep is one of those things where we all know when we're not sleeping good, you know, and it doesn't feel good and it makes our lives harder. But getting a good night's sleep is essential for heart health and also for your sort of general metabolism, which includes, you know, processing our food and keeping your insulin levels at the right place. So finding ways to sleep is really important. And so that's easier said than done in our lives. Everyone's so busy. But, you know, thinking about things like sleep apnea, you know, if you snore and you don't sleep well, or if you're, you know, your partner maybe says, hey, you're snoring a lot, you know, and that type of thing, getting that checked out can be really important, because if you have an untreated condition like sleep apnea that's affecting your sleep, even if you don't know it, you know, you can get that treated and you're going to improve your sleep. You're going to feel better, more energy, and your heart's going to thank you too.
You mentioned your blood pressure, and fortunately, I'm one of those guys that I take it every day. I have a blood pressure monitor, and I take it every day, and I know my numbers. So how important is it for people to know their blood pressure on a regular basis?
Yeah, Ron, I'm glad you do that. I think that's the right approach. You have to know your own numbers, which is sort of a general takeaway that I like to, you know, I think I like to tell my patients, I like to tell people when I'm, you know, giving talks to groups of people. And I bet people that are listening to this podcast are the kind of people that are going to do this. You know, you want to take charge of your own health, right? So you can't really rely on the doctor when you go in there once every 3, 6 months, once a year, whatever, and they check your blood pressure right there. You know, what is that going to tell you? Really, you want to know, what's your blood pressure when you're living your life? What's your blood sugar when you're kind of living your day-to-day life? So you got to kind of know those numbers and keep track of them yourself. So it's really important. I love that you do that. So having a home blood pressure monitor and checking it once a day is a great approach to kind of keep track of where you are.
Right.
And the other thing that it does is it helps reinforce what you're doing. So if you're taking a blood pressure medicine, we don't ever know what your blood pressure is. You know, you might be like, why am I taking this dumb thing? Well, you know, you really need to know that. And you may say, hey, I'm actually on a medicine, but my blood pressure is still running a little high. If you take that information to your doctor, they're going to be so thankful, because it's really going to allow them to make healthy, you know, decisions and correct decisions to support you. So the more you can do that with blood pressure, you know your numbers, blood sugar, know your numbers, you know, same with your A1C when you're checking your, when we're talking about diabetes, same with cholesterol, have some idea kind of where your cholesterol numbers are. So it's not just your doctor saying, hey, yeah, things look fine, or things are not good, let's add medicine. Ask them where they are. Can I, you know, get a download of the labs? Can you print those out for me so I can see where, you know, my LDL is, that's the bad cholesterol, or my HDL, the good cholesterol, or the triglycerides, which can, if those run high, those can be a marker of cardiovascular risk as well. So it's really important to know those numbers and to kind of take charge of those numbers and your own health, because unfortunately, we healthcare providers, we just, I hate to say this, but we're too busy and no one's going to do it right. Like, you can do it for yourself.
All right, Dr. Bader, it's time for the Mythbuster segment of the podcast. All right. Are you ready?
I was looking forward to it. Yeah.
All right. Myth number one. Diabetes won't cause heart disease if you take diabetes medications.
Okay, good. Yeah, great myth. So, you know,
myth. All right.
Yeah, I say it's a myth. And the reason for this is because, you know, diabetes is a major risk factor for heart disease. So if you have diabetes, we have to treat it, and we want to get your blood sugars at a good, safe place to prevent damage to the heart from diabetes. So it's essential to treat it and to take diabetes medicines. And the good thing is there's some great newer diabetes medicines over the last decade or so that specifically improve heart health, even beyond what they do for your blood sugars. They're just, they help protect the heart. So they're great medicines that we try to use all the time in treating diabetes. But there's all these other factors that play a huge role in your risk for heart disease. Blood pressure, we talked about, you know, cholesterol, your family history. And so it really thinking about these other factors, making sure that these other things are treated. And honestly, even though diabetes is an important risk factor, you know, blood pressure is a stronger risk factor for heart disease. Mm. Of course, I want you to treat your diabetes, but don't forget about these other things that we also have to watch.
All right, Dr. Bader, myth number two.
Okay.
People with diabetes are mostly overweight.
Yeah. Ooh. Well, okay. Technically, that's true. So I'm not going to break that myth. But you know what?
In America, a little truth to that, right? A little truth.
It's a little truth to that. Yeah. But in America, you know, a lot of us are overweight. And if you're very overweight, the technical term for that is obese. So there's a big group of Americans, quite frankly, around the world, but in America in particular, where we're overweight or obese. And that trend also, you know, is reflected in people with diabetes. So there are certainly people that are not overweight that have diabetes. And of course, you know, type 1 diabetes is a whole different thing, but even type 2 diabetes, which is the one that most people have and that is very tightly associated with weight. The thing about gaining weight is it contributes to insulin resistance. And so our body makes insulin, it tries to keep your blood sugar where it's supposed to be. But as we age and as we gain weight, that our bodies become more resistant to the effects of insulin. So it doesn't work as well, essentially. And so gaining weight does tend to correlate or match up with increasing blood sugars. So there's certainly some truth to that. And that doesn't mean you can't be, you know, skinny and have diabetes. And that doesn't mean you can't be a little overweight and not have any diabetes, but they're associated for sure. And the good news is that losing some weight can have a huge impact on your blood sugars and on diabetes, as well as on your heart health and your blood pressure and all these other things. So if you are a little overweight, or if you're quite overweight and you want to lose some weight, I think that's a really important thing to talk to your doctor about. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to get back down to, you know, your weight that you were in your high school prom. Like, you don't have to be the perfect weight, but any weight loss helps. So if you can lose, let's say 5% of your weight, you know, if you weigh 200 pounds, you lose 5%, that's 10 pounds, right? That's a reasonable goal to lose that weight and then maintain it, keep it off with these healthy diet, physical activity sort of thing. That can have a really important benefit towards lowering your blood sugars and improving your heart health. And that's been proven. So there's good evidence behind that.
Well, that's great stuff, Dr. Bader. And I personally want to thank you for joining me here on True to Your Heart podcast. Your information has been fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ron. It's my pleasure.
I want to thank Dr. Edelman and Dr. Bader for being on the show today and telling us how diabetes can affect your heart health and giving us some advice for staying active and healthy. For more information on how you can be true to your heart, visit www.truetoyourheart.com. I'm Ron Jaworski, and this has been True to Your Heart, presented by Amarin.